outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Chain.
Well, for the first time since this quarantine began, I am not alone doing a podcast in my study. I have somebody with me today, and since we're still observing all our quarantine restrictions, you probably already guessed who that is, but it took a little work, I'll be honest with you. But my wife, Sarah, has joined me in my study to talk about some stuff. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
It's my wife, Sarah. Some of you have met her. She's been around with me a lot of places. A lot of you haven't, because she stopped traveling a whole lot a while back. And you like not traveling.
Yes.
Particularly the kind of traveling I do, where I'm talking all day long, from 10 in the morning, 8 in the morning till 10 at night sometimes, staying in people's homes.
And, yes.
Yeah. Sarah's more of a, as we've discovered, more of an introverted person in the best possible sense of the word. She likes a few relationships that go deep. And she doesn't like being in the same, in an ever-changing conversation all day long with ever-changing groups of people because it wears her out.
Yes, a lot.
A lot. Not even a little bit. And so she likes being home with her garden and her pups.
And hopefully someday kids and grandkids.
Someday, maybe we'll see those grandkids again. I talked to someone today who's got grandkids coming for the weekend. They're already kind of opening up in their family a little bit.
What state are they in?
California.
Oh.
But they've decided they're reaching across that divide and they're going to start connecting. And if they get the COVID, they'll get the COVID altogether, I guess. So we, on the other hand, we see them across the backyard or on the TV when we're taping the Jesus story, but that's about it. Anyway, I asked Sarah to come join us today. And there's certain, we got a few rules with Sarah here because Sarah doesn't like rules a whole lot, but this one's for her. She offered to come do this today because on Sunday, we celebrated our 17th, Sunday, May 17th. Sarah and I celebrated our 45th wedding anniversary. Can you believe it? 45 years?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You can. That number, for whatever reason, I guess it's because it's getting close to 50. I think people have been married 50 years, and I go, oh, my gosh, how does anybody do that? And we're almost there.
Yes, we are.
My goodness. And we were supposed to be in Latvia today. We were supposed to be on a cruise through the Baltics and leaving out of Copenhagen, doing the Scandinavia deal with some friends who are also celebrating anniversaries similar to ours. Not the same time frame, but same dates. And all that got washed away in this coronavirus pandemic. So we're home together. And you're not as disappointed as I am, perhaps. I was looking forward to the trip.
Yeah, it would have been nice, but... I'm not devastated.
No, you're home with your dogs and whatever. But here's the rules. One thing, Sarah's last podcast, you were on 2016, I believe. So it's only 4 years ago you were with us.
Oh, well, I guess I didn't need to do this with her.
Yeah, so, you know, she hates microphones. That's the big thing. And if you know Sarah, and some of you do, and Sarah's traveled with me some places, Sarah's probably the most endearing of the two of us to talk to. People really enjoy getting to know Sarah and being in her life, and she enjoys conversations with people. She doesn't enjoy as much conversations with microphones, A, and B, she doesn't always enjoy the emails and whatever it seems to engender from people that want Sarah's thoughts about something. So,
or more questions.
Yeah, more questions. And she's not an emailer. She just doesn't do a lot of email stuff. So, here's the rules. She's going to join us today. We're going to talk to you a bit about our marriage and the journey that we've had getting to 45 years together. And we're not going to write to Sarah or call or want Sarah to be involved in more discussions with you about your marriage. Okay. With me? Yeah, you're fine to write me. Talk to me. We'll see what we can do. But and I think I know Sarah pretty well. I could probably answer most questions for Sarah. But I didn't want to talk about our anniversary or the celebration of our marriage without her. And I know somebody wrote me today, you guys have made quite an accomplishment. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like having this 45-year marriage is a great accomplishment?
I guess. I wouldn't have thought about it in that way, but...
I don't know that I do. I get weirded out when I hear that because there's been a lot of grace in this whole process. This has been a gift. The way we keep finding a way to each other, the way we keep, and we've got friends, we've got people we love whose marriages didn't last that long, and for various reasons, things went sideways, and I don't feel like that we're better people, so we got a longer marriage. I just am grateful that we've kept turning to each other and kept finding God together, and it's taken an awful lot of grace that we've each given to the other, and a lot of grace that God's given us to get through this. So I celebrate it less as, wow, look at us. We've done, we got to 45 years. I look at it as, God, thank you. Thank you for bringing Sarah into my life a long time ago and for us finding a way to make this marriage work together so that we come. Your card, I'm going to read the card Sarah sent me. This is Hallmark. I'm not reading what she wrote me. That's private. But the card itself, Hallmark greeting card, I love the first thing on the cover. It just said, it's been an amazing journey to this place where we are. Has it?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know how you found this card. You must look through 500 cards or something.
No, I don't like shopping for cards.
You don't like it, but this is perfect. We started out like so many do, with nothing but dreams in our pockets and stars in our eyes. Along the way, we met our share of obstacles. But with love as our guide, we've always enjoyed the adventure, and now here we are, so many miles and memories later, deeper in love and stronger for the journey. I know we're right where we've always belonged, together. That's just a sweet sentiment, because I have enjoyed this journey a lot, and that doesn't mean there haven't been times when we've been completely frustrated at each other and our inability to communicate about something or to find a common ground on which to go forward, but we've just kept finding our way, even if it took sometimes days and weeks to find what would be the key for us to move on together. And so I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk about that. And I had a number of young married folks, probably no one married longer than 16 years on this thing, or 17, 18, to just kind of, hey, if you could talk to somebody that's been married 45 years, what would you want to ask them? And man, I had people send us like 200,000 questions, so I'm glad I didn't ask any more than the people I asked, but I've culled through them a little bit, because I would just, you know, if you want to, you know, if we have some wisdom to pass on to people who are still in the middle of all this, or maybe just starting the journey, because a lot of questions were about the start. Some of the folks have only been married just a few years and wanted to know some of that kind of stuff. So I invited Sarah. She willingly came, if not excitedly. We say it that way?
Not excitedly, yes.
But she's here, and probably for the last time. So we're going to enjoy Sarah on this podcast, and who knows, might be my last time too.
But probably not.
I don't hate it as much as, I don't dislike it as much as Sarah dislikes it. This 45 years, though, gave me a chance, because I made Sarah cards. Sarah shopped really early so she could put cards in quarantine for a while and let them thaw out or let them de-germ or whatever they needed to do. Me, I made Sarah card, I kind of puppy love plus 45 years is what I titled it. But it got me thinking, because the last trip I took was to Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is where Sarah and I met, man, in 1972 on Valentine's night at a banquet. We weren't together. We were across the table. But that began the interest anyway, to a date some couple weeks later, to a relationship that began to grow. And then she became my fiance and then my wife. And man, that whole journey, I look back at our puppy love days. I know some people despise all that. Man, I look back at it with great memories. I loved dating you, loved getting to know you, even all the uncertainty of, should I say this, ask that, how much I disclose, not disclose, does she like me, does she not like me? Even all that stuff, my goodness, I just being there, and this trip was without you there, made me think a lot about it, and that's kind of led to the card I made her, and the thoughts of, man, now 48 years later, that's how long we've been hanging out together. Been good?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it has.
Yeah, and you're not the same girl I dated, though.
No.
Am I the same guy?
Yeah.
Really?
Probably.
I haven't changed in 48 years. I'm the same old guy.
Some, but I don't know. I would say you'd be pretty about the same.
Oh, my gosh. I think I'm totally different. Isn't that amazing? Huh. 45 years later, we can't even talk about it. No, we're obviously talking about different things. I'm talking about my spiritual life. And
well, how you use all that is different, but
I'm still a bit of a clown.
Yeah?
Still a bit of a knucklehead.
I didn't say that.
You didn't fight me on it either. You didn't like, hey, no, don't say
I
that.
I agree.
Yeah. And so we got married and we moved out to California. I was an associate pastor at a church in Fresno for 5 years. And we helped plant a congregation in Visalia for 15. And then some of you heard the story. We kind of got moved out of that. And for the last 25 years, we've been kind of journeying a bit differently. We've been kind of walking with Jesus together and loving each other and living more relationally. And what I thought was, quote unquote, my ministry went away. And I just found a way to be a brother and a friend to people and to help them on their journey. And God's cared for us. And here we are. And it's just brought some total, the amazing thing about marriage is, you know, they do all that work on compatibility. And then you get married and you become very different people than you started. And so the whole compatibility thing goes out the window, I guess. Not as important as we think, maybe. But what is important, I think, is not two perfect people didn't get married 45 years ago. Two very broken. I will say selfish on my side. I don't think Sarah was ever a selfish person. And that she's always very giving to others and very gracious and very kind to me. She never raises her voice. She doesn't yell at me. I mean, Sarah's just... She can go up in an environment that does that, but she also had some things that made her a little less than authentic through part of our marriage.
Yes.
And we got married in an environment where, you know, the man was supposed to be the head of the home and the wife was supposed to, you know, support him and all that. Way back in those days, and where you were a homemaker for a number of years, completely raising our kids. And
then until even Andy went to school was really the first time I got a job
outside the home. But you were also, you were a pastor's wife and you carried a lot. Yeah. I'm glad you guys couldn't see the look on her face when she said yes. It was not a delighted look.
No.
I've met a lot of people on this, even former pastor's wives who really miss being a pastor's wife.
And that's their personality and that's for them.
And not all of them for a good reason. There's a lot of them just, I miss the stage. I miss being the head girl on the playground that all the other girls suck up to and, you know, some of that kind of stuff. But Sarah never fit that role well. In fact, we had not been dating long and you told me you would never be a pastor's wife.
Yes, I did.
Then you married someone that thought that's what they were being called to do. So
yes, I did.
Why'd you do it?
I don't know.
I have no answer for you.
What I was thinking, I don't know.
We're also having a breezy day today here, which is why Sarah's allergies are kicking in, which is why her voice sounds a little weak and distant today, but I'll try and bump it up a little bit so everybody can hear it well. How has this adventure been for you overall?
Well, for the first 37 years, I was in the marriage as a different Sarah than what I am now. And so I think that makes it different. I mean, for that, it was fun, a lot of good memories with the kids, raising kids and friends. So
what's when you say it's just different, how would you depict that in a particular way?
I saw myself differently, or I really was a different person internally, maybe not externally, but internally, about myself and my worth and who I was. And I didn't even know I wasn't like that.
Would you say more true to yourself now?
Yes.
And more before trying to live up to other people's expectation?
It all started because I was in growing up, the home in which I was raised, it wasn't, I would say there was, it wasn't abusive, but not physically. And so with that, I created my sense of myself was created. We get our view of ourselves as we're growing up in our home. And so my view of myself was different than what I really am now. And so then that carried over into marriage. It carried over also by becoming a pastor's wife and the expectations that was placed upon that role also affected me. And
so what do you feel now? Do you feel...
But I didn't know that it was... I didn't know that it was an issue until later years, 36 years later.
Yes, you were doing all that, but you didn't have a real sense that...
No, I knew internally there was something... I struggled internally, but I thought it was just me.
But you hit it well, even from your husband.
From myself.
Because I don't remember our years quite the same way. I remember them, you know, full of lots of joy with Sarah, and Sarah always being a great partner in this relationship and very supportive of anything I was about or anything I was doing. I think that some of what you were going through kept me from being a better partner to your journey because you didn't know what it was yet. And like I said, it's only been the last few years. And those of you who want to hear it, we did a podcast about it about 8 years ago, and I'll link it in the podcast notes if you want to go back and hear some of what that transformation looked like for Sarah and still looks like for her. But I say it this way now, you know, two very selfish people got married. I put more of that on me than you 45 years ago. And we said we loved each other. We thought that meant was, oh my gosh, there's things about Sarah that just makes my heart flippity flop and things about me that make that for you. And we're going to be going to have this happy little home. And then we discover as you get together and start living a life that all our insecurities and all our selfishness and ways, and again, me more than you, the ways I would manipulate things to get what would make me happy. And again, I'm not always aware of that. I just know, that's what Dave Coleman said to me years ago, as long as your personal well-being is tied to another person, you will manipulate them. And that I didn't realize how much of that was manipulation. It was just, you know, being a good husband and trying to get us to make the right choices. And of course, I always knew the right choices, and I just had to get you to see the right choices with me. And at some stages in our marriage, you were pretty easy to go along with all that.
Well, that's part of the whole thing. That's all I did. I went along with everything and what everybody did. I never, and that's what carried over.
And even though we were schooled in the man's the head of the home and the wife is the helpmate kind of thing, I know when we got married, one of the things I said to you was I didn't want that kind of a marriage. As I read Ephesians 5, the real joy of God is that two become one. So I want your insight, desires, passions in this marriage to come with mine and find our way into some kind of oneness. That was what I was always committed to. But I don't think we did that really well when we were younger. And I would ask you what you think, and what's going on inside of you is I've got to tell him what he thinks is best. And so what does he want me to say? And you try to give me that answer. And then I think, man, we're incredibly one. Sarah and I want to do everything the same way. And then it turned out not to be so wonderful for you.
Well, that's where I didn't. That's where I said, as I was saying earlier, is my perception of myself growing up and carrying over into college, into marriage, was to really not feel like I had a lot to offer. And so then that continued on.
It's interesting because I never felt that way about you. I never felt like you didn't have a lot to offer. I always felt like you did. I still do. Incredibly wise woman, incredibly, and I don't mean just wise academically. You are. You graduated with honors and got a master's degree when you were 50. So there's all that. But there's also just a lot of street smart, a lot of people smarts, a lot of looking beyond what appears to be happening to see what's really happening. And I've always thought you've had that kind of wisdom and incredible skills at the whole running a household, managing your life, managing ours. Incredible. One person asked, what's the most important thing you've learned? You wish you'd known it when you got married. Is that kind of what you've been talking about, more about who you are?
Yeah, if you know. I mean, we all, when we get married, we all have, you know, I don't know, I hate the word baggage, but we have things in our lives because we're not perfect. And, but I didn't even know I didn't know, so it's not like I wish I knew. And what I know now, life would be a lot different.
I think the most important thing I've learned in this relationship with each other is to really let each other have our own journeys. I think even a desire that the two would become one, and we were taught a lot about everything, we're doing it together, we're seeing together, we're trying to get on the same page, we're trying to do all that. And I think over the last 20 years especially, we've learned that there's three journeys in this marriage. There's my journey and what God's doing in me and how he's changing me and what he's asking me to do in the world. And there's Sarah's journey, who she is, what God's doing in her and how he calls her to work in the world. And those aren't always the same thing, nor do they happen in the same time frame, you know?
No.
And so part of our marriage has been to recognize there's three journeys here. There's my journey, and Sarah has always been the biggest cheerleader for my journey. She's always been that. She's always, you know, supported my dream to be a writer, my passions in ministry, even what we felt like was God's call to live more without having our finances nailed down in terms of income. And you've always found your way to be supportive of things that I felt like God was doing in our life. And I think I was less so with you early on in the marriage. And I think what I've come to appreciate, I hope I'm the biggest cheerleader on your journey. I hope I've been that the last 20 years. Because you can say the last, you know, 7 or 8 when some major change is happening. But I think this started back 25 years ago. I was the first, I always joke about there's Sarah 1.0 and then Sarah 2.0. And now we're on Sarah 3.0. There was some major changes back 25 years ago. Your parents died, and all of a sudden Sarah's becoming a different person, more assured of her voice and wanting to have that voice, and me making space for that voice. So, and then the third journey is, what can Sarah and I do wholeheartedly together? What do we do together that's wholehearted? And I wish I'd known that early on. Instead of, well, we're trying to get on the same journey, well, we're trying to move more of our journey into that same space that we share. But there's also, even in very practical things, you love to garden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not even just kind of like I like being in a garden. You love the whole making dirt, growing stuff from seeds, tending, deadheading, weeding. You love that. I grew up on a farm, man. Any day in the dirt for me is a bad day. And even in our married life, I always felt like outside work was mine. And so I didn't want you to be out in the garden if I was trying to relax for an afternoon or watch some golf on television. And I was annoying about that, I think.
Yeah.
And finally, she convinced me, I enjoy this. This is my recreation. Don't make me go inside because you don't want to work in the garden anymore. And I don't think that, it took a while for me to catch on to all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I enjoy playing around the golf. At one point you tried to take it up, could be more time for us together, but you hated it.
Absolutely.
And I told you, well, you don't need to do this for me. It's not important that we golf together.
Well, Louise and I thought we would try. We did.
Yeah, we did. And you thought it was a stupid sport.
It is.
But I'll tell you this, there's not a, I could probably count on one hand, the number of times I've come home from playing golf where you haven't asked me, how was it? How was your round? Enjoy yourself. And I love that about you. I just love that you care to ask and care to know how it went. And I've always careful to come home after a day, even if it's been a tough one, and find something nice to say because I get to play golf. And I enjoy doing it. I'm doing much of it lately, but hopefully we're getting back to it out here in California. But I wish I'd known that about the three journeys and celebrating yours, you celebrating mine, and then us. And I think we are. I think we find those things that you and I do together, whether it's live stream, whether it's who we have over for dinner, or who we fellowship with, or how we do vacations or time, just time use, money use, all that stuff. What can we do wholeheartedly together? And I think that's becoming a bigger bit, but there's still the ability to celebrate our differences and not feel like we've got to think the same way or act the same way. And in that, the real advantage of things we do have to decide together, it brings in two perspectives and finding the space between those where we're both wholehearted. I think before it was always, it's the right way to do this. And obviously I know what that is. So I'm just going to try and help to talk you into it. And you were easy to talk into stuff, unfortunately. I remember making the joke. Somebody asked me, do you guys fight? And I said, Sarah and I never fight. And that's because it takes two to fight and one of us never will. And that was you.
Yeah.
But you're learning not to fight because you're never a fighter, but you are learning to be more vocal about what Sarah really is.
A little.
A little?
A little.
I think a lot. They may have a lot more to go. Maybe there's lots going on in here I still don't know about. I hope not after 45 years, but.
But in the church, don't you think in the church, a large part of, well, some churches, not all, but the husband being the decision maker and all that comes, I think, strongly from the Christian view of marriage in the church that is taught. a lot of churches.
It comes from the tradition you and I were raised in, more of a conservative evangelical. Yeah. Even you, you've been handling our books, finances, since.
We got married.
Year one? Yeah. And it just, I had a habit of adding checks into the bank account and deducting deposits, which makes things real confusing. And I'm not a detail guy. Anybody who knows me knows I'm not a detail guy. I'm a big picture guy. Sarah loves that. Now, we're raised that, you know, the man needs to run the finances, which, you know, we always talk about it. You don't make independent decisions without me. That's a little stuff you do.
But I mean, some of that, I think, comes from the Christian voice. I think it's gotten less over the years, but the whole view of the woman is supposed to submit and she's the weaker one. And
she's weaker, more easily deceived by Satan.
Yes.
That was all the stuff we were taught growing up. And there's scriptures that kind of look that way, but you've got to look deeper to go, no, that's not what that's saying. But that played into some of your weakness. I mean, mm-hmm. It just gave you a scriptural verification for some of your fears and insecurities, unfortunately.
Yep.
I'm glad we're finding our way out of that, because I think now we really do talk out just about everything. What's your wisdom to this? Here's my wisdom. And then we struggle to, what can you do that's wholehearted, and what can I do that's wholehearted, and how do we find a decision for the best of us? Think we do that? I do, because I think one of the things you learn, I hope guys learn this, because I think guys tend to just more naturally want to let the wife handle wife stuff, and they'll be the guy, and they want to get their way a lot. And I think when guys learn, you will never be happier than seeing the woman you love happy. Not when I get the woman I love to give me what I want. When you see her happy, when you see her fulfilled, when you see her living the life that makes her full and more complete, there's just no greater joy. Not in playing more rounds of golf, not in getting your way about financial expenditures. That's what I've discovered as part of this journey, that I really want you to be all that God has called you to be. And if there's any, whatever Paul's talking about the husband loving his wife like Christ loved the church and washing her with her words, he's not talking about dominating her. He's talking about, how do I, alongside Jesus, help Sarah, help the woman I love, becomes all that she's been called to be? And for that to mean, for either of us in the relationship, it means both of us have got to change. Nobody gets to stay stagnant. Hey, that's not what I married. I married this, and you got to stay in your lane. No, it means we're going to go on this adventure together. When you say, you know, I love the place where we are, I love the place where we are too. And I would have said that 10 years ago, and some of our biggest changes have come in the last 10 years. So I had to think about, what will the next 10 years bring? What are we going to be saying 10 years from now about how much more of you we get to know, and how much of us we discover, and how much of God's life that he's giving us and inviting us away from selfishness? Because this is what, to me, has been the biggest experience about learning to live loved by God is marriage. Can you love deeply the person you're closest to? And if you can, and if you learn that, that's an ever-growing adventure, then your marriage will be awesome. Not perfect, just be awesome.
Don't you think that the younger couples that are married now probably have more a sense of not that? It's more sharing things and sharing and doing that, because I think they're learning from a different space than what we and people in our age group are.
I think the hope is there. I think in big strokes, yeah, we are learning to have a more shared relationship. But I do hear from a lot of women still that they carry a disproportionate load of the household stuff, even if they both work full time. Some of that stuff just falls to women still, because men, they go to work and then they've got their recreation and their sports and their whatever. And they're happy to let someone else pick up the stuff they're not aware of, because they just don't get aware. And I think that takes a lot of honesty from the wife to say, I need your help here. And the guy's saying, okay, you get it. So what I hear is it's better, but it's got a long ways to go still, unfortunately. I think we're hearing less teaching about that, more male-dominated household, which is good, having less of that teaching. But I still think some of that psyche is there. The men often are just not as aware of what it takes to make a household work. So they're not volunteering. They're not seeing it. And so many times the wives don't feel like it's their place to try and get their husband. And they don't want to be the naggy wife, so they don't go there. And I think one of the things that helps, and you and I think have done this pretty well, I've instigated maybe a lot of it, but every year or so, sometimes the anniversary trips, we're in a car driving somewhere together, we're doing something, I'm usually asking, what can we do to make this better? I remember her last birthday card, I just gave you things to tell me one thing I can do to improve this marriage for you. And you took a week to think about it, and you came out with a very small thing, which it wasn't small to you, but I thought you'd have a list of like 20 things, so I'm really glad it was one thing on it. But it's not like we just do that once a year. Anytime you come to me or want to come to me and say, you know what, this is hard for me, could we do something about this? And know that I'll listen. And know that, you know, it's not either the woman or the man controlling the marriage. So it's not either one of those two things. It's how do two people loving each other find a way to us. What's us? And not everything has to be us. There's some things that are Sarah and some things that are Wayne. And then there's the us. And the best stuff in our marriage is the us. It's the things we enjoy together wholeheartedly. That's the best stuff. How has the way you make decisions changed as a couple from when you were newlyweds? Maybe we've already talked about that.
I think we've already talked about that.
I know one of the things now, we even had a rule, I think when we were young, like nobody spends over, was it $15 or $20 without talking to the other one? And we had that kind of a rule. We don't have that kind of stuff now. We have a sense, I think we both do, of when I need to bring the other one in on something and when I'm free in my own space. You do a lot of the household management stuff. I come home from a trip and I'm finding stuff that was done around the house. And I'm going, yeah, we never even talked about doing that, but here it is done. And if I had a problem with it, I would tell you, hey, I've got a problem with this. You're doing things that I would really love to be brought in on. We've had that conversation a couple of times. But overall, and people always say, you know, what if we disagree on a choice here? And I know one of the things we deal with is, who does it affect the most? If it affects Sarah the most, I'm going to lean into her space. If it affects me the most, then I'm going to at least make my stuff clear and hope that we can find a way to do it. But you don't have to make every decision together. There's some things that are in Sarah's purview, some things that are in mine, and we don't sweat that stuff. I think I'm more aware. I don't ever want you to be my victim. So I'm always, if anything major is going on, I think you do it pretty well with me too. But there are things you do, I have not a clue till I have to find them. Well, you did that? Wow. I don't want you to ever feel like my victim. I want you to be in on the decisions that affect your life. One of the things that affect our decision, like I said, we work toward wholehearted. And what we've added to that is, I never want you to be less than your true self. And you've never asked me to be less than my true self. That's always true. But the other side of that, and that, it's not always been true the first part. I didn't know what your true self was. I thought I did. But now as I'm finding out, I want you to be true to yourself. You want me to be true to me. But in being true to ourselves, we never want the other person to be a victim of that person's choices. But if you are, you just get resentful. If I'm making decisions, spending money that, you know, got a gambling habit on the side that you don't approve of, if I had things like that, I think it would just build resentment in. And you just don't want anybody to be your victim. Did you have conversations going into marriage about what type of culture and environment you wanted to create in your marriage?
Mm-hmm. Cultural thing, like what?
We did some. We had premarital counseling with the pastor who married us, and we talked about shared, you know, how many kids and how are you going to handle money. And we had a lot of those kinds of real intellectual assessments of the journey. We did. But I don't think they worked out particularly well. I even thought about a lot of these questions are getting an intellectual answer that people can apply to their marriage. Because that's how we're kind of schooled to think about everything. Whether it's being on the job, you get training, you do it a certain way. And I think we try and do marriage a certain way. But the thing about marriage is there's two very different individuals in this marriage, right?
Yeah.
In any marriage. And just to impose some kind of outside standard or expectation on a marriage, eventually that's going to unravel somewhere. Because it's two people with individual makeups, insecurities as well as strengths, got all that. And somehow they've got to find a way to love deeply and to live together gracefully. And I just don't think there's too many things you can impose on that to say, oh, here's the way it should look. Here's how to handle the money. Here's who should do this. Here's who should do that. Here's how to raise kids. Even with kids, yeah, start adding new people to the marriage. You had kids. And then the kids aren't even the same. They have different temperaments. Different things motivate one that doesn't motivate another. And you're back into this journey of how do people love, treat each other with respect and kindness, and find a life together.
Yeah.
Somebody asked if we ever considered divorce. You ever consider it?
No.
You ever think it would be an option? Would anything happen in our marriage that would make divorce an out for you?
I mean, I wouldn't think that it would happen, but I think you have to always say that there could be, but I mean, because we're human and change, but I wouldn't believe so.
Yeah, I can think of a few things that would put it there. If I would abandon you, divorce might be a good out. If I abused you, definitely, I think divorce is a deal. And committing adultery. It doesn't have to be the out. And I know a couple that's been hurt very much by that, and yet they decide to stay in the marriage and get healing and move on. So I've never considered it. But here's the other thing. I think when we were young, the whole idea of, you know, you're going to get married, you're committed forever. And that we had that, you know, it's better to marry than burn. So you get married because you want to have sex. And the only way to have sex is to be married. So now once you're married, you've got to live with that forever. So you better make that decision carefully. I never bought into that. I think what I'm always, whether I'm speaking to a crowd of people or writing something, the worst thing the thing I think about a lot is I don't want anybody to be bored. I don't. I don't want anybody just having to go along. Even when I was a pastor and had to sit through the weekly sermons, I looked for ways to make this interesting and exciting for everybody. Didn't always achieve that, but that was always my goal. I think with marriage, it was, if I'm going to live 45 years with you, 55, 65, my parents were married 66.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to just stay married to you. I wanted to have a marriage that I could wake up every day and feel good about. A woman I loved, I wanted her to be the one I loved through my whole life. I wanted to grow old with you, and we've done that. We're getting there.
Yep, feel it some days.
Yeah, feel it
more than others.
We've helped each other through surgeries, and we've done all kinds of stuff. But I've always, if I'm going to live with somebody, I don't want to just survive it. I want to thrive. I want you to be happy. I want to be happy. That takes real work. I mean, there's lots of pain in what I just said. It's not just, oh, we're going to pretend and make happy every day. It means we're going to do the real work of a relationship, which makes sure we stay in that space where we're open, honest, authentic, and growing together and enjoying the romance of it. But we haven't always fit even the male-female thing, all those stereotypes well, right? Like you, good financial manager, that kind of thing. Me, I've been more the romantic one in the relationship in the sense
yes.
of thinking of special days and cards. And
mm-hmm.
and I don't think I started out that way. It's one of the things that I felt like God drew me back to what I'd promised you, and I was getting ready to do a wedding for somebody. I looked at our old marriage vows, and one of the things I'd promised you was I would promise to cherish you all the days of my life. And I just, because I think of the marriage vows, I just promised to stay faithful. No, I did promise that, but I also promised I would cherish you all the days of your life. And I went, you know, I'm not doing that. And so I started to make a concerted effort every day to let you know some way that I cherish you. You're the woman I cherish. And it doesn't always have to be, you know, bouquets of flowers and all that. It can just be a word, a kind word spoken. Or when I'm on the road, thinking something to write in an email or say to you on the phone or FaceTime chat or whatever to let you know that you're special to me and this is the woman I love and you hold the most important place in my life. And I think at this point we can both say we are each other's best friend by far. It's not even cute language. It's just we are. You're nodding. Nobody can see you nodding. So the silence is going, oh, maybe Sarah doesn't believe that.
Yeah.
I mean, we pretty much know. I mean, there's still more we may discover about each other because we discovered about ourselves.
Yeah.
But I think we've dinned into all the weeds of who we are, what we are, and how God wants to keep changing us. And all that, to me, keeps moving toward how do we love each other better? Joyfully. Not how do we love each other better because we're supposed to for God.
Yep.
Such a joy to have Sarah join me for this podcast. And actually, what we decided to be one has become two because we went on for quite a bit longer. And rather than make one huge podcast out of it, we're going to do two. So we'll finish up next Tuesday for those of you who want to hear the rest of our conversation together about this great adventure of learning to love another human being as much as you can in the life that you have.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.